Welcome to Mumfessions, the podcast that will normalise all of the challenges we experience as mums. I'm Laura Guckian, life coach, founder of Mind Mommy Coaching, and most importantly, mum of three. This podcast is unlike any other motherhood podcast, because you will be my guests. Each week, I will invite you to share your mumfession. A mumfession is a challenge or experience that you are too afraid to share. The stuff that makes you feel like you are doing this whole motherhood thing wrong. I am going to help you recognize you are not the only one. You are not doing anything wrong. And most importantly, I will give you the tools you need to be a happier mum. And guess what? This season, I've invited some special guests to help me answer your mumfessions. Because it takes a village. And this is the emotional village you need. Coming up this week.
You know, I remember lying in bed with this crippling postnatal depression. And I remember just feeling black and empty.
Everything we hear about motherhood, it's the best time of your life. This is going to be amazing. And suddenly a light switch went off.
I remember Googling frantically mother-baby psychiatric units.
Oh my goodness, Anna. I have never felt so seen. I have never heard another woman say this to me.
My mumfession is that, yeah, I felt like the worst, most crap mum in the world when I'm like the most incapable mother.
Make sure you listen until the end, where I'll be sharing my weekly tip and challenge to help make things easier for you. Before we begin, I'd like to ask you to do something for me. Please hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you are listening. Before we begin today's episode, just a little trigger warning. We will be discussing the topic of suicidal thoughts. If you are in a place where you don't feel ready to listen to this now, please skip and come back at a later date. And if you are deeply struggling with your mental health, please reach out to your GP or a trusted healthcare provider. I am so excited to welcome our guest today. Let me take a deep breath to read this out. She is a mom, psychotherapist, life coach, number one best-selling author, co-host of the amazing Luana podcast, relationship expert on E4's Celebs Go Dating. Have I left anything out? Anna Williamson, you are so welcome to Mumfessions.
Oh, Laura, what an introduction. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, this tired old ass has been schlepping around this industry for a long time now. And I love what I do. I wear many a hat and it all kind of weirdly just seems to amalgamate. So it's lovely to be here on your fab pod.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. And you, of course, are here today to share your mumfession and to help answer an audience mumfession. But before we get into that, really quickly, I would love to know, can you remember the moment where you decided, I want to help people? Because what I've read out there is quite a list of, I suppose, qualifications and career achievements. But behind it all, am I right in saying there was a desire to help people?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. Can I also say as well, this is a really poignant time to be doing this because it's the eve of my son's birthday.
Oh.
And it was my son, really, that sounds really cheesy, but quite obvious, but changed my life. But I kind of had two huge monumental moments in my life, which led me down this path of therapy, talking therapies and a passion for it and learning about it, practicing in it, which I do. And the first moment when I realized I wanted to help people was I had a monumental mental breakdown in my early 20s. And at the time I was fronting kids telly and a very high precious job. But the catalyst for it was I was in a toxic relationship. I was in a relationship that we would now label, you know, several 20 years on. God, I'm 43. How did I get that old? We would now call it a coercive controlling relationship, psychologically abusive, which is now a criminal act, which it wasn't at the time. But equally, I didn't know that's what it was. When I was in the eye of the storm, no one was talking about it like we do now. So really, that's kind of was the catalyst to why I wanted to speak openly about my experiences, because I realized this was just something that was affecting so many people and people weren't talking about it. And as a result of that relationship, I suffered terribly with my mental health, and I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, GAD, and panic disorder. And the cocktail of mental issues that can come with that, such as depression, OCD, you know, there are so many different symptoms around that. And that's what led me then to thinking, when I got well through having some amazing therapy, I realized that, my God, this is a tool that no one teaches us, you know, in life in general, learning about ourselves, learning about our own boundaries, our own standards, our own values. You know, I was a massive people pleaser and realized this was serving me really wrong. So I wanted to train in it, study in it. It was my thing that I never intended to be on the telly to do. I really didn't. It was always like my back. When you go into the world of telly, you kind of often need a backup career. You did back then. And this was my backup. And yet it translated onto telly. And then the second time that, again, made me really want to move into, so that was kind of where my mental health and relationships kind of coaching kind of got anchored. And then 10 years later, I then had my little boy who is turning 8 tomorrow. And I had the worst perinatal anxiety, birth trauma and postnatal depression. And of course I did. As my mum said, of course you did, Anna. If someone was going to, it's you. And there I had my second huge, you know, mental breakdown where, you know, genuinely had suicidal thoughts and had a terrible time. And so then I really became passionate about parental mental health, you know, maternal mental health. And that's kind of what's led me to where I am today.
Wow. And thank you for sharing all of that and being, you know, being so honest. And I think a lot of, if you ask, that's why I always ask, like if you ask a life coach or a psychologist or a psychotherapist, a lot of it comes from our own lived experience of, I found this really hard. I felt so alone. Right. Why is nobody talking about it? And why is nobody supporting us?
Right.
So I think it's wonderful because there is that human behind the academic. And I think it always opens that trust up a little bit more. And can I just say, it's just amazing that you went from that, overcoming all of that, to being so successful in your career and now being on TV. Like, it's phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Oh, and I wonder, did Anna back then have any idea this would happen?
No, no. And this is, I always say that I don't think I'm clever enough to have a game plan quite as it's articulated, has been executed. And it's such a lovely compliment, you know, and I genuinely, you know, don't look, I mean, I'm a trier. I'm a hustler. I'm a hustler from birth. You know, it's in my DNA. My brothers are hustlers as well. I genuinely believe, you know, we are, you know, that foundational level, you know, products of our environment, you know, who our role models are, you know, how we model our parents' behaviors and beliefs, you know, it does have a huge impact on us one way or the other. You know, some people follow that lead, some people, you know, actively don't because they've learned from that. But my dad, I always live with the piece of advice that my father gave me, who is just, he's my Achilles heel. My mum's equally amazing, but my dad is the eternal optimist. And I think my sort of sunny nature, which people often are very kind to say they think I have, which I do most of the time, kind of comes from him. And he always said to me, listen, kidda, if you want something bad enough, you'll find a way to get it. And he always taught me to, it sounds really cheesy, but you know, my dad was a self-made man, you know, 15 years old, he dropped out of education, went into a family business and turned it into something, you know, really quite successful and, you know, retired 55 years later. But he always said to me, you know, particularly going into telly, particularly going into, you know, a precarious industry of entertainment and broadcasting initially, he just said, well, look, someone's got to do that job. So why not you? And I've always sort of believed that. And don't get me wrong, Laura, I have lost more jobs and more auditions and more interviews than I've had hot dinners. But all it's taken is one or two yeses to put me back on that path. And, you know, I always say, you know, that failure is really important. You know, we have to learn from everything we've done. And I think 25 years of being in entertainment, but then 15 years of being in talking therapy, you know, and being a mom, you know, the juggle is real, but I probably have never felt more content within myself now in my 40s.
I completely get that. And I think we probably have that in common in, for me, I will never walk away from this. And I have been knocking on doors and we don't share that part about the doors that don't open. I think for me, it's the drive of, I had this horrendous experience and this is what I'm turning it into and I'll never ever give up. And I wonder, is that in you as well? This drive of, I have to keep going.
Yeah.
And it does eventually work out. I think if you keep working and trying and don't let the setbacks get you, it does work out.
You know, you're so right. And actually, I feel quite emotional actually when you talk about that, and in a good way, because I think when you've hit rock bottom, as I have done, you know, twice monumentally, but you know, we all have blips. You know, COVID was a whole interesting time for people, you know, as well, you know, when someone's career flatlines overnight, you know, as a lot of people's did, you know, and you're having to rethink it. But I think because I have come from a place where it couldn't feel any worse, as in,
you know, when I had, particularly after I had my son, the birth trauma was so acute that I remember, it's very poignant today because I really get quite emotional on the eve of my kids' birthdays, particularly my son, because he was my warrior baby. But, you know, I remember lying in bed with this crippling postnatal depression, which I didn't know it was at the time, and birth trauma and anxiety, and I hadn't slept. And I remember just feeling black and empty and thinking, and genuinely, I wouldn't say contemplating suicide, that's a big thing to say, but genuinely feeling that I can see why not being here might be a more comforting option for me right now. And I think when you've been in those moments, and then the first experience I had actually with the toxic boyfriend, and I was experiencing such crippling anxiety and panic attacks, I remember driving my car and thinking that if I just sort of, you know, swerved the wheel into the central reservation and I sort of had a bit of a car accident that put me in hospital for 3 weeks, so I could just kind of go, oh, sorry, I've got a broken leg or something, it would just allow people to leave me alone and to shut off from the world. And I think that's why I feel so passionately about mental health, because to have those black, horrible thoughts that so many of us have had and may have, and to feel that crippling isolation when someone like me was as supported than probably anyone could dream of being, and yet I felt that desolate loneliness, it makes you hustle harder, because I think, thank Christ, I came through that. And you know what? Life is great. Like, it sounds cheesy as hell, but honestly, Laura, sure, I have my off days. Of course I do. But every day I'm just like, thank God. Like, look at what I have. You know, I have health and wealth within my family. I'm not saying I'm wealthy, but, you know, I have food in my table. I have a roof over my head. And that for me is wealth. And that makes me hustle.
And Anna, I'm actually getting emotional listening to it. And I'm, you know, I didn't realize that about you, and you might not know my backstory, but
I
struggled so much when I became a mom 8 years ago. I have a little 8-year-old boy as well.
Oh.
And like, without going into the detail, but everything we hear about motherhood, it's the best time of your life, this is going to be amazing. And suddenly a light switch went off. And I struggled so much with my mental health that when he was 10 months old, I checked myself into a psychiatric hospital, spent two months there. And honestly, it took 3 years to rebuild my life.
Bless you.
And that's my why. And I just covered it there in two sentences. But that feeling you were describing there of thinking, maybe there's an easier way. What if I wasn't here anymore? And I don't think anyone can truly understand that feeling.
No.
Unless they've had it.
No.
And it's a scary place to be, because there's a part of having that feeling where there's still the logic, where you're like, yeah, but that's not the solution.
Right.
But then there's a moment where that logic starts reducing and you're like, oh, wow. And I really love, and this is not where we planned on taking this conversation, but I really love that we're talking about it, because you, as an expert and a professional in this field, and the same in what I do, we're not supposed to talk about it. We're not supposed to say, oh, I had these feelings.
But we should, Laura.
But we need to, Anna.
But we need to, because, so you know what? Thank you for sharing that with me, you know, and with your listeners as well, because I remember Googling frantically mother-baby psychiatric units in the first 2 weeks of having Enzo, my son. And as you say, everyone else around me going, oh, you must be so happy.
Enjoy every moment.
You know, and I'm thinking, my body's broken. I'm angry with my body. My birth went terribly. I had an enormous hemorrhage. I'm angry with everything. I wasn't even awake or conscious when my son came into this world. You know, I didn't even believe he was mine initially. I thought someone must have switched him at birth. All these feelings, which I felt silenced about. And I remember Googling mother-baby units, and it was like, I was desperate to go into one. I was desperate to go into one, but I didn't know how to. And I think, as you say, so many people, like, there are, you know, heavy caveat, there are some people that have wonderful birth experiences. Mm-hmm. And I love that for people. And I don't ever want people to dumb that down either. Like, some friends are like, oh, I don't want to say, but I had a really good birth. I'm like, say it. We need to hear these wonderful stories. Yeah. We want to hear them. This is what we want to hear. It's amazing you've had a good experience. But equally, if you've had a shite one, as you say, you can't possibly, like, we're in the worst crappy club in the world, right? And I remember, just to add to yours for context, like, you know, good for you for, you know, being brave enough to take that step to get that help you clearly needed. And I remember knowing I needed the help, which, so I didn't go into a psychiatric unit, but I got psychiatric help through a consultant psychiatrist who then supported me hugely with medication and psychological support. But I remember knowing that this was the dark moment was when I was Googling as well, went to Dr. Google. You say, everyone else is Googling fluffy towels and baby toys. No, I was Googling psychiatric units and adoption. And it wasn't.
Oh my goodness, Anna. Can I just, I have never felt so seen. I have never heard another woman say this to me because I was at the same stuff.
Right.
And it wasn't everywhere around you, it's women enjoying motherhood. And you're like, why? There's no words to put in it. You're like, I feel like I'm going to die.
I'm going to die.
This is so unbearably hard.
Yeah, get me out of this life now. Yeah. I can't cope. And you see this probably, like, I don't know about you, but I saw my little baby and I knew I loved him. I knew there was a primal love for him.
Yeah.
And Googling adoption wasn't because I didn't want him or anything. It was because I didn't feel good enough. I was like, this little baby deserves probably someone better than me, you know, someone that kind of has got their shit together as a mom, someone that birthed him without him having, you know, facial paralysis temporarily because of the forceps. You know, in those moments, I'm thinking it was my fault I didn't push him out, or that forceps had to pull him out. It's my fault that his face has got temporary paralysis, you know, because of the forceps. Now, it wasn't my fault. And I know that now. And I've had some wonderful therapy to come through that, you know. But in those moments, it's a bloody dark hole of shit. And you feel, because also in that moment, you know, and I had a moment, a friend at the same time that was going through like her fourth round of IVF, you know, and could only dream of this perfect little baby that I had. So I didn't dare talk. I remember thinking, so again, you throw even more shame on yourself with Annie, you horrible human, you know, you've got this beautiful baby boy, you know, and how dare you know, say this. People might go, oh, what if your son hears that when he grows up? You know, what if he thinks he's not wanted? And I'm like, but that's the point. Like when I wrote my book, Breaking Mum and Dad, and Breaking Mad, which is all about anxiety and coping, you know, my son could not feel more loved. And I know that he is like my Achilles heel. And actually, I do tell him that now he is understanding. And, you know, we talk sometimes, he asks why his sister came out, you know, through my tummy. I had a planned section because I was not having a vaginal birth second time around. And I say, well, you know, you came out of Manun. That's a whole new story, but I'm childline counselor, so I'm used to delivering age appropriate information. He's an inquisitive little boy, but he knows that his birth was a tricky one for mama, and that mama got, you know, mama got really poorly, but I then got well again, you know, and he's a huge part of my recovery in that too. And I don't think we can shy away from these things. I am proud that my son knows that and will know that when he's older.
It's a really good concept, or it's a really good thing you brought up there, because I'm asked all of the time, Anna, do you think you'll ever regret sharing your story? How do you think your children will feel about it? And I just think, oh my goodness, if I had developed cancer when I became a mom, would anybody ask me that question?
Right.
I did not ask to be mentally unwell. I did not do anything to deserve it.
Wasn't your fault.
Like, why do we talk about mental health the same way? And I have lovely conversations with my little boy. I tell him mommy's head, because he's autistic and has ADHD, so he knows about the big emotions. And I was like, my head just got really big and it felt really hard, and mommy got help from people. And, you know, daddy and nana and granddad minded you. And that's what he knows for now. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But actually,
oh, I got tingly then listening to that.
And there is so much trauma there, and there is so much. And that's probably, and I know we were here to talk about your mum fashion, but maybe I is your mum fashion, right?
Well, actually, this is the mum, because I came, you know, slightly prepared with that in mind. But that is my mum fashion, is that, you know, I mean, I'm really enjoying this chat, Laura, because as you say, I think it's not often I go into this space, and I'm really happy in this space because it's so important. And it's important that we share emotions. You know, we're both tearing up because it's a big ass deal, you know, and my mum fashion is that, I felt like the worst, most crap mum in the world, when I'm like the most incapable mother. And this isn't me gassing myself up, you know, but I am. I know I'm a brilliant mum because I'm a real mum. And, you know, my son and my daughter, I mean, I always think my poor little girl, Elia, she's, because she had such a, in my words, easy time, planned section, we went private. I mean, she had a bougie old time. She did, my little kidder. But my Enzo, you know, kind of went through the trenches with me and was in the mud with me. But you know what? I just think, you know, especially raising boys like we are, and I think there's a real responsibility as a mom to really educate, you know, all our kids, but especially I think boys sometimes. And I, you know, I just think to myself, when he's grown up, let's say he wants children, let's say he has a partner, a female partner, and he goes through this, and she's poorly. Well, you know, to equip him with some context around this huge experience, I think will only enrich their lives and help them develop resilience and empathy, which are all the tools that we need to give our children. We can't sugarcoat them, but as long as our children know, which they do, they are so deeply loved, regardless of the starting point, because that's life, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm so glad we're having this conversation. It's like I did not know any of this about you, Anna, but, and this is probably a deep question. So if your confession is that you had this experience in motherhood and had all those feelings, when you look back now, do you carry any shame or guilt around that? That narrative you were talking about, I thought I was the worst mother. Is there any part of that left in your head?
Great question. No, there's not. But if I'm completely honest, I only really let that go when I was planning the birth of my second born, because I thought I had got rid of it. So when I got pregnant, I wasn't going to have another baby after my first. Like, I was like, nah, like I, you know, I'm well again. I'm not going to risk a nosedive. You know, this little boy needs me. You know, I need him. My husband, you know, doesn't need this either. But I had a very planned conception and pregnancy, very unsexy. So I had perinatal mental health community team, and I had some, you know, some good work with a psychologist there to sort of deal with flashbacks I had around his birth and feelings and stuff like that. And I thought I had put it to bed, and I had done a lot of work of putting it to bed. I was happy with my choices with the second one, but it wasn't until I was talking to my consultant, I'd already dictated I was having a planned section second time round, but they all agreed that was the best decision for me anyway. And I had this sort of, I didn't realize until he went through my birth notes, because he wanted to, very boring, but side note, wanted to make sure he had enough blood because I'd hemorrhaged before. And he just said, in case you hemorrhage again, I just want to make sure I've got all bases covered. So he looked at my birth notes, which I'd accessed, and I sort of said to him probably quite flippantly, oh, I was terrible at birthing, you know, I couldn't get him out, you know. And he looked and he read through my birth notes, and he was like, no, it's not what it says here. And I was like, what does it say? And this was three years later. And he went, you did really good. He was like, I'm not even just saying this. He went, you pushed him 4/5 out. And I'd always thought that I was just I just sucked at giving birth. And he said, on the notes here, he said, you actually went, you literally nearly got him out. He went, it was just at the very end, his head was in a position that you could never physically birth that through your pelvis, which is why they needed to give you an episiotomy and forceps delivery. And it was in that moment, having this, I didn't know I needed that piece of validation. And just suddenly he went, you did really good. And I was like, I burst into tears in his office. And it was the first time I felt a bit proud of what I had done in labor, as opposed to just thinking, oh, I was just shit at that whole situation. You know, that moment I did let the last bit of that shame and guilt go. And I turned it into a, actually, yay me. You know, I went through 40 hours of labor. You know, I had a spinal block, epidurals, episiotomies, hemorrhage, and I still managed to nearly get my baby out. And actually, I did get my baby out with the help of health professionals. And in that moment, I did let it go. And actually, I'm proud that I mean, I wouldn't want to have that experience again, but I would have it 10 times over to have my son. Like, I really would. Like, he was so worth it. And yeah, I guess I come at it now. I take everything as a learning. You know, I talk about it always on Slevs Go Dating, you know, with relationships. I've had a toxic relationship. I even don't regret that, because I've learned about it. I come at it from a place of perspective and experience. And I think that only enriches me in my life. It's a great question, though.
I love that. And the reason I asked you is, like, on a personal level, I think I probably have about 5% of that left. Mm-hmm. And even though I've done the work, and it's so hard to let it go. And it's such a frustrating thing, because I just feel for any new mom going through this. Because when I look back at me, and as you were saying it there, when you got the validation of you did amazing, I look back at me in that really tough stage, like the worst day of my life, where I was like, if I ever figure out what happened and if I ever put my life back together, I am using this experience to help other mums. I don't really look back ashamed or guilt or you did something wrong, Laura. I'm like, oh my God, you were absolutely incredible, because mothering is hard, full stop. But I think there is something extraordinary, special about mothers who struggle with their mental health and do it anyway and overcome it, because that is single-handedly the hardest thing that you can do in your life.
The contrary to the stigma that I think is fortunately being smashed now, people with mental health issues aren't weak. They're actually the strongest people that you'll ever meet, because they're dealing with that shit as well as functioning and dealing with everything else in life. They are the strongest because we're peddling harder than anybody else to manage that, keep our shit together and still do life. And I wonder as well, without getting all, you know, psych on your ass, but you know, that 5% you're holding, you know what, maybe if I'm being completely honest, Laura, maybe I'm holding a 5% in too. And you know what? Probably am, because the conversation gets old leaky eyes. But you know what? I think even in this moment, we should accept that 5% is there. And it's okay for that 5% to be there, because you know what? That 5% is that reminder of what we've been through and the everything we've overcome and the love that we have and the courage that we've had. And sometimes holding on to that 5% actually, I think, can be more beneficial than losing it completely. Because with the majority of us is like, we're cool. But actually that 5%, that's our little pain point, and our little pain point just for us, which we can use for that moment of reflection and to just be really honest with our emotions.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if we didn't have that 5%, maybe we would be papering over those. And I think it's really honest to allow, which we've done now, we didn't plan this, to sit in that 5% and go, yeah, you know what? That was a really shit time. And it's okay to go back there sometimes and just to lick that wound again. But recognize also how far we've come.
Anna, it's so healing. It's like a scar that will never fully go. But you know what? Let it stay there. Because it was a shit experience, a horrendous experience, but we overcame it. And actually, for the work you and I do, it's probably such a big part of our why, and it's our fire. And if we forget that, Anna, it's trying to let it go. I want to keep it because, oh my goodness, we're absolutely phenomenal.
And I think that 5%, it's just reframing what that 5% is. That's almost, it's like the nub. It's the heart, as you say, of the motivation of what we do and what we stand for and all the other mothers out there who have been through what we've been through. And as you say, scars fade, but they don't go completely, but they don't bother us. Do you know what I mean? A scar doesn't bother us anymore, but it's just there as a little reminder whenever we might need it. And I think that's okay, because I think that's real. And that's, and as you say, to the point that you say, we go into this profession and, oh, therapists should never talk about their personal lives. Hell, I'm the complete opposite. I'm like, people need to humanize it. And to your point there, most mental health professionals that I've certainly come across go into that profession through or have empathy with that profession because of personal experience. So I think it only opens up better client-patient rapport.
Oh my goodness, Anna, I wish we could talk about this for another half hour. I know through my work that every mother struggles with her mental health on a spectrum. Like, this is real. It is there every single day. We need to be shouting about this. We know that suicide is the leading cause of maternal death in the first year.
It is.
We know this. But yet none of the support is focused on mental well-being in the mother.
It's shite. It's
like,
terrible.
When is it going to stop? I'm so angry.
It's getting worse.
Anna.
I'm so angry. It's getting worse. And something needs to be done to literally churn out a new mother. And I think this is the thing, like, because giving birth is, you know, one born every minute, whatever the, you know, the phrase is. I think we trivialize, because it is so prevalent and common all the time, we trivialize how monumental that experience is for that mother's and father's partner's life. You know, this is their experience, their first time experience. And it is literally like you are being reborn and having to learn a new job. Yeah. And statistically as well, women who are kind of, I'd say, how can I paraphrase it, in control of their shit, you know, career women. I'm not saying other women don't, by the way. I'm certainly not suggesting that anyone else, but women that are older who have perhaps had established careers and are suddenly in a position where they're having their baby for the first time, typically struggle more.
Yeah.
That was me. And I believe, and I don't know, this is just my hunch, but I believe that the increase in postnatal mental health issues with mothers is because demographically we're getting older now, having children. We typically have had more careers before we've had children, more financial stability. And I think that's where it becomes so much of a head screw, because you're like, well, perhaps I'm more established now than I would have been 10 years ago, you know, financially, logistically or whatever. But yet the mental health can take even more of a wallop Why? Because I was good at that. And this is what I felt. I knew how to do my job. I knew who Anna.
I have no idea what I'm doing here. And you've taken my sleep and my body is absolutely battered.
Yes. My vag is falling out. I hate everyone.
Yeah, I can't sit down. I can't stand up.
And I even had rectal incontinence, which no one has ever taught me about rectal incontinence, because obviously the episiotomy, excuse me for being a bit graphic on this, but my butthole was not in control of itself. Oh, so as I'm sitting on the couch and literally my bum is just like, what's that? I've just pooed myself on the couch. No one tells you this stuff, you know?
No.
And that plays into your mental health. So the physical and mental health it's all linked, you know, and exactly that. And that's when I fell apart. I remember watching Lorraine on the telly, which at the time I was doing the entertainment reporting on Lorraine. And I remember 10 days in my dressing gown, I probably just pooed myself, trying to feed this little bubba. And I remember just desperately missing being on that sofa doing my job, because that was a job I knew how to do and I didn't know how to do this one. And this is where I actually went back and took on a corporate job, just a little corporate mini job. I think it was like 8 weeks postpartum. My mental health was still shot to absolute crap. However, that was a slight turning point for me, because I remember doing this job, I was nervous as hell, anxiety through the roof. You know, I was on medication, you name it. Yeah. You know, my mum was looking after the baby. My husband was looking after the baby. I was only up the road half hour. I was only gone for 3 hours. However, that moment of autonomy to leave the house with a little bit of makeup on and a dress, step back into Anna, the presenter shoes, just for an hour to host a charity awards thing, and then come back. And I remember getting my cab that they'd arranged for me to go home. And I always remember this. The driver was late, only by 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But it was that moment. And this is what, it was such a sweet moment for me, because I suddenly was like, oh my God, get me back to my baby. And it was the first time I had felt this gut-wrenching need for him. And because I'd been with him all the time, going, oh my God, get this baby away from me. I don't know what to do with it. You know, hiding in Morrison's toilets, you know, at the supermarket, because I just didn't know what to do. And I suddenly remember going, and I like probably like a complete lunatic, but I'm like ringing up the driver, Addy Lee, going, where are you? I need to get back to my baby. Oh, I'm just, you know, 5 minutes round the road. Now I need to get back to my baby. And I remember but the feeling in the cab on the way home of this, oh my God, I can't wait to see my baby. Oh my God, I can't wait to see my baby. And I got through that door and I picked that baby up and I was like, yes, I've gone and done my job today. And I feel like that's given me a little bit of lightness in me, because I can do something. And then it was like, oh my God, but I missed my baby too. Oh my God, I'm all right at this. And that for me was pivotal. And my husband and I, we sat down and we went, we're going to have to rethink this. I think I'm going to have to do a little bit of work, because I need the hybrid, and that absolutely is what helped me.
And we're going to leave it in a second, because we do have an audience one.
Oh God, yeah.
I'm actually quite emotional you talking about that, because I think the work I do with Momfessions and Mind Mommy Coaching, that's what's healed me, Anna.
Yes.
It is what's healed me, because I have the privilege of helping mothers every day, of talking to them. Oh my goodness, Anna, thank you for sharing your Momfession.
You're so welcome.
And we didn't plan on going there, but we went there and we needed to go there.
Yes.
And I really hope if there's any mom listening, regardless of where your mental health is, we've all felt it.
Yes.
Anna's felt it, I felt it. And oh, we God, have
I still
felt
feel
it at
it.
The extreme.
I still feel it. You know, there are some days, I mean, my kids are my absolute world. In fact, it gets better and better, like in my experience, but it also gets more challenging too. But, you know, and there are some days, like a couple of days ago, like they're both fighting each other. They're both screaming in my ear, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, this is hell. But you know what? It's okay. In that moment, you just take a breath and this too shall pass. But yeah, so anyone that is listening to this, and you're probably the same as me, Laura, you know, I get so many DMs, you know, I'm an ambassador for Birth Trauma Association, you know, and Mind. I think it's fair to say that nobody could have felt as shy as Laura and me.
No.
But we're here and we're smiling and we're doing it and we're making it happen. And you know what? There is definitely like light at the end of that tunnel, but you just got to keep sharing it, right?
Oh my God, there's so much light. You have to choose life. You have
life
to
is better.
Going.
Life is better as a result of having gone through that.
We were never supposed to do this whole motherhood thing alone. The village is gone and it's not coming back anytime soon. That is why I've created an online village just for you. Imagine this. You have 24/7 access to like-minded mums in a safe online space away from social media. And I'm there too. You get to access 2 monthly online meetups with me and other guest experts, all designed to help you navigate different chapters of motherhood. And you have access to the Mind Mommy Coaching Academy,
your online vault of bite-sized classes and advice, all designed to help you be a happier on-camera mom. You don't have to do this alone anymore. Click the link in the podcast description and say yes to a happier on-camera way. Let me help you. You have absolutely nothing to lose and everything to gain. It's not selfish to mind, mommy. It's essential.
Shall we listen to an audience momfession?
Please.
My momfession is that my in-laws treated me unfairly when I had my baby. They became very obsessive. They had lost one of their parents a few years ago and were compensating for this new baby that was their first grandchild and first nephew since their parent died. I felt very overwhelmed, anxious, sad, not good enough as a mother with all they said and all they did. My partner used to come back from work and tell me that his siblings weren't happy with the way I was treating them. And at that time, there was COVID present. When they used to visit myself and the baby, they used to turn their backs on me. I didn't want visitors. I wanted the comfort of my own parents' home. And I wanted to be visitor-free until I got somewhat recovery done and my healing done. I had a C-section. I found it very traumatic. I found the recovery very hard. And I also felt that I wasn't being heard. I was told by my sister-in-law that everything I felt, my anxiety, worries, sadness, anger, all that, they were all excuses. It wasn't very nice to hear. The relationship with my partner wasn't great at the start. 2 years on, it's still up and down. I lost trust in his family after an incident with the baby, and they've stopped talking to me, and it's 2 years now. I felt at the time that my in-laws were trying to break us up as they started rumours, spreading lies, and texting each other, making up stories of what I had said in text messages, which was very untrue. And I was very hurt. And I'm still hurt to this day. Why are in-laws so painful when a newborn comes into the world and it's me that suffers and I'm the one that gets blamed?
I have to be honest here. I have a lot of feelings coming up for me. If this was my client, I would be asking her the very direct question of, is this really about your in-laws or is this about your partner? Because what I'm sensing from that is she didn't feel seen, heard or supported by her partner.
Spot on. It was the heard. I didn't feel heard. I think you're spot on, Laura. Yeah, it's that's a very emotional message. But as you say, I think really the in-laws are the symptom of the cause, which is essentially this. The reason she has the in-laws is because of her partner. And it sounds to me as though, yeah, her partner hasn't heard her, hasn't listened, has dropped the ball. She's felt completely unsupported. I think it's the whole classic, isn't it? It's about choice. We can't change other people. We can't change how other people behave or what they do, but we can change how we view things and how we internalize things. And this is what I would say to this young woman is the old adage, you can't choose your family, but you can choose the way you respond. You can choose the way that you stand up for yourself. You can choose who you want to be around, and you certainly can choose who you want to be around your baby. And I think it's the partner that, as you say, is the spotlight here for me. It's the relationship sounds imbalanced, it sounds sketchy, and it really does start with him. And I would be very much encouraging some form of very effective communication with her partner to articulate her feelings, to ask him to listen and not respond at that point. But I think she needs to do some work on herself, on her own boundaries, her own standards, and almost give herself advice as though she was giving advice to a best friend from hearing this. And I think all of us listening to that would go, oh, what a dreadful family, you know, what a dreadful in-laws. They may well be, but we don't know because we haven't heard from, you know, the full context of that. But I think for this young woman, she's gone through, as we know, the most monumental thing of having a baby, and her boundaries haven't been respected. Now, I don't know whether she has laid those boundaries out as firmly as she should have done, but she can certainly do that now.
I agree. And I think I love that you say we can control certain things. And that's what it comes back to. We can't control what people say to us or what they think about us or what their actions are, but we can control what we do with that. And that's what I would be suggesting to this lovely mom is think about what you need and want. Try to, you know, me as a total coach now, like just leave the past where it is for a second. What do you need and want right now? You know, what part of that can you give yourself? what part of that do you need your partner to support you with, mm-hmm. and sit down and have the conversation. Mm-hmm. And instead of looking outwards and what everyone else is saying or doing or what they did or didn't do, what mm-hmm. do I need? I'm worthy. I am going through one of the most vulnerable, challenging times of my life. I need X, Y, and Z. I'm going to try and give this part to me. I'm going to ask for support for the other. Right. Because I think that's one of the hardest parts about becoming a mother is the lack of control. Mm. It feels like there's so many things we can't control. Yes. And you probably know better than me through your line of work, relationships, particularly with our partner, is the one thing that fundamentally changes.
100%. 100%. And actually, statistically, 1 in 5 couples break up in the first year of having a baby. You know, that's how huge the situation can be, which is why you've got to have each other's back. You've got to work as a team. And, you know, to this young lady, you've got to tell people how you want to be treated. Mm. You can't assume. And some people, you know, it can take a lifetime to learn that skill set, but this is what we're all here to learn. That's why people go to coaches like us, to help you really work on your self-esteem and your self-confidence and who I am and what I expect. And actually, to the point of this young woman, when I had my second born, my daughter, I knew that I didn't want to have any visitors for the first couple of weeks. She was also going to be born at Christmas. You know, I just wanted peace and quiet to figure it out because I didn't want to have another mental breakdown. You know, it was a touchy time. So I would never have done this with my first child because I didn't know and because I was still in sort of people-pleasing world with an anxiety disorder raging. But the second time, actually well in advance, I told everyone did take the mick out of me, but I didn't even care. I sent an email to my whole family and my in-laws. And I just said, look, just wanted to get ahead of the curve here. When I'm going into birth, please wait for us to invite you round. Yeah. I want to spend a good couple of weeks. I'm not even sure how long yet. I don't know. It's TBC, but by myself, I won't be messaging people. I won't be doing, you know, I want time by myself to make sure I stay fit, healthy, and well for me and the babies. We will call you. Now, I'm sure there were eye rolls. I'm sure there were eye rolls in the family. I couldn't give a flying toss because at that point I'd done the work. I'd gone through the therapy and I was like, hell no, my body, my baby, my home, my emotions, my vagina, my C-section, my breasts, breastfeeding. I ain't going to be walking around making people cups of tea. And my God, if someone comes in and starts opinionated on how I should be feeding my baby or what I'm doing, then get out.
God help them. Yeah.
God help them. And I think that's it. It's having that. But sometimes we need to be taught that confidence because when our confidence and self-esteem has been shot to shite, you know, we do need people to champion us and build us back up, which is why what we do, Laura, that's our role is to help people. And this mother, I would really encourage her, you say, turn the spotlight inwards. And I would get to write down 5 things that make me great, 10 things that I've achieved in the past year. Keeping my goddamn baby alive is one of them. Do you know what I mean? They wouldn't even, these in-laws wouldn't be striking and moaning about the way you bring up your baby because there wouldn't be a baby if you hadn't provided the baby. You know, it is a privilege. You allowing them. I mean, that's what I would do, affirmations. It's a privilege. I'm even allowing my in-laws to see my baby, you know. But as you say, I think they are a wider symptom of the cause being your partner hasn't got your back and your relationship, but maybe what's he going through, you know, having that opportunity to open it up to him. Maybe he's struggling. Who knows? Maybe he's getting, you know, maybe he's feeling depressed. Maybe he's feeling like he's overwhelmed. Maybe, he, you know, and having that really effective communication is always key in a couple, particularly when you have a baby, to figure out what you need. Exactly, you say, Laura, what I need, but asking your partner, what do you need? And then where is the compromise?
Yeah.
Where's the middle
ground? How do we deliver this? And I love what you share there about your second experience of having a baby, because do you know what you've just described, Anna? It is that journey you went on of, I didn't know what I needed or wanted the first time. Right. I didn't have the confidence to verbalize that. But actually, maybe it was your shit experience.
It was.
and we laugh at it because we have to, Anna, because there's no other way to look back at it. Where you just the second time, and I was the same, I was like, I literally don't care what anyone thinks. These are the rules.
Exactly.
If you cross these rules,
you're out.
I can't apologize because I am not going back to feeling like that ever again.
I even said, caution. Yeah, it was literally that. And I even went as far as to say, also, please don't buy me any gifts. Like, I know that, and I even said, I know this sounds really up my own backside and conceited and ungrateful. I'm not. Thank you for the thought. But I remember from last time, I have no energy to write you a thank you note. And I've been brought up well, and I will always send a thank you note. I don't have the time. Please just don't worry about flowers. They're just a ball ache for me to have to get a vase. You know, I don't need anything. Yeah. I just would love your love and support, you know, when we're ready, you know. And I, as you say, I think once bitten, twice shy. And these experiences only help us grow as a person to really revalue our boundaries. And as you say, sounds like yours are the same as mine. My boundaries, that's, I mean, oh yeah, they all have a little laugh at me. Oh, did you all get Anna's email? And I was like, hell yeah, I hope printed that out.
I love you that you wrote an email. I'm like, that was really clever, actually.
Well, do you know why, Laura? Because I knew I was having Eleonora at Christmas. It's like, this served as the perfect social scene for the family. Oh, there's a new baby in the family. Oh, we'll just plan on the 28th. We'll pop round there. We can do the Christmas vol-au-vents and mulled wine as well as seeing them. You know, it served as a social day for family. So I was like,
not for you though.
Not for the mom.
And I love that we've covered this, because actually let's normalize women having babies and going, nobody come near me unless you're going to come and let me sleep or cook or clean, do not come near
the house. Don't even bother coming in. And I think, and you know what, funny enough, I got worn down on, it was, to be fair, it was 2 weeks later. So it was just after New Year. And my mother had said, oh, a lot of the family are coming around, you know, just for a post-New Year little, you know, luncheon thing. Would you bring the baby around, you know? And I was like, I've told you. I was like, well, fine. So I did do it, but I literally went for an hour. You know, my scar was hurting me from my section, you know, unapologetically. I was like, right, I'm going home now. I'm going up to bed for a sleep. You know, I want the baby back. You know, I'm going upstairs with the baby now. Bye. You know, but I see it so often now. And it's, you know, when you see these poor mums that are sitting there in their dressing gown, they look like shite because they're knackered and they're still making cups of tea. You've got great Auntie Sylvie who's making her 15th cup of tea and waffling on about, you know, something. And all you're thinking is, would you just get out of my house? Like, I'm not being rude. Like, I really love you, and I love that you want to come and support me and my family. But right now,
I want the village, but not in this way. Right. I want the other village.
Right. And this is why I always say to everybody else around a mother and a father, ask them what they need. Don't just, what do you need right now? Do you want company, or do you want me to piss off? And ask that question, right?
And be blunt, because they are very tired. Yes, we've no time for the chit chat here. Be very specific,
right? And if you give a time window, again, for you new mums out there and new dads, you gotta, and partners, you gotta have your baby mamas back here, because often they don't want to be bad cop. You gotta be bad cop sometimes, and you go right. She's feeding. She's tired. She's this. She's whatever. You can come between 11 and 12, and I will throw you out at 12. Don't be putting that kettle on at 5 to 12, because you're gone.
You've got to be stricter. There may be refreshments, but you will be making them yourself.
Yeah. Or even better, bring them and remove them. I don't even want to wash up your cup. You know, I think we need to be really honest about that. And we need to be not apologetic in saying what we need. Because I think for too many generations, women have literally just had to be put up with being this carcass who's given birth. We're in an age of empowerment now. Women, we have to stand up for ourselves and go, what do I want? And what do I need? And if nobody respects you, well, I think it's saying more about them than it does you.
Anna Williamson. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. We have had a little cry. We have had a little giggle. But you know what? On a personal level, I am so proud of you and I. And I know I don't know you, but I just think
we're friends.
Our most vulnerable moments, because I feel it in my bones. When another woman shares it and you felt it, you're like, I don't need words. I can feel it.
I'm there with you, babe. Right? I'm in the mud with you. Yeah.
And look at us now.
I know.
Look at us now. And if you had told me, God, if you had even told me a year ago you'll be on a podcast with Anna Williamson, I would have been like, that's not going to happen. And look at us having these lovely chats. So for anyone out there who is finding motherhood hard, and it's important to say, even if it's not as shit as Anna and I experienced it, it's still valid. It's your hard. It's real. It's valid. Just know that, like, motherhood is chapters. This is your shit chapter. And there's an easier one coming.
Yeah, and that's an important point as well. I'm sure you cover this a lot. But yeah, I think we need to be really, yeah, careful in life as well. That we tend to focus on the ones like us who had really shit times. Yeah. But actually some people, you know, I know there's a huge demographic of people that have maybe had IVF and then they feel like shit. And then they feel like they can't say anything because they went through IVF. So they must have wanted
this
baby
back. Grateful.
But you should be great. You know, and sometimes you just have a really crap day. You know, you've had a lovely birth, a lovely baby. You know, it's okay. As you say, your situation is your never. Never measure yourselves. Never ever apologize or feel guilty about what you're feeling. Like I always say to my clients, nobody asks to feel how they feel. They just do.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Hot water feels like hot water, regardless of your circumstances.
Right.
And if you put your hand into boiling water, you wouldn't stop and go, oh, sugar. Maybe Mary down the road has it worse. Maybe I shouldn't be finding this hot. Oh God, maybe, but I'm so lucky in this way. You'd be like, that's really bloody hot. Ouch.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Right.
Right. And now so, I need to be nursed back to health.
I need to be nursed back to health. Yeah, so whatever you're feeling, whatever way your mental health is, it's real. It's valid. You didn't ask to feel like this. It doesn't matter what your circumstances are.
No.
It's real and it's valid. Anna Preach. Williamson. Oh my goodness. I hope I have a friend in you now.
We are
because you're absolutely amazing.
Sisters
Cocktails
in trauma.
In London. Yes. Yes. And toast away that 5% that Woo! We're holding on to.
Ditto, ditto. And I look forward to that. And I will give you the biggest hug you've ever had when I do.
Oh, Anna Williamson, it has been a pleasure to join Mumfessions today. I'm going to link everything below about Anna, her Instagram, her books, everything about Anna. We love you, Anna. And you now probably have a whole new bunch of friends in Ireland.
Listen, Ireland is my, well, I am absolutely blessed. I really am. And thank you for taking the time to have me on today, Laura. I've really, really enjoyed talking about this. And I hope that we have, helped so many more people listening.
I'm sure we have. Thank you, Anna. I was really surprised by today's episode. I was not planning on going there with the wonderful Anna Williamson, but I'm really, really glad that we both shared our vulnerability and our experience of struggling with our mental health as new vulnerable mums. And I actually found it really, really helpful on a personal level, listening to Anna talk about how she felt, you know, how hard it was, how scary it was, and really, I suppose, wearing that 5% of guilt and shame that I still have and reframing that from guilt and shame to more of a scar that honors that really, really tough chapter of my life and Anna's life, and understanding that that's part of our why and it's part of the work we do now to support people, and recognizing, I suppose, how much Mind Mommy coaching, Mumfessions, and the work I do with supporting mums every day has healed me on a personal level. And I suppose I just want to thank you all because, you know, at the end of the day, it did begin with that really hard chapter of my life where I deeply struggled with my mental health, where I couldn't see a way out, where it was really scary for a while. And I want to thank you because you have healed me. You have given me new life again. You have allowed me to build a new chapter of motherhood where it feels easier, where I feel happier. Absolutely, there's still days I cry in the shower. Absolutely, there's still days I want to run away because I find it so hard. But that is motherhood. It's not going to be all daisies and amazing. We all have mental health. We have to mind our mental health. It is like a muscle. It will go up and it will go down, but we have to mind it. And even though I had the most extreme experience of struggling with my mental health, it's all valid. And it's something Anna and I spoke about, that regardless of your circumstances, regardless of what's going on in your life, you are allowed to find it hard. You don't need to justify it. It's real and it's valid. And mental health is a spectrum. We all have it. We all have to mind it. So I really just wanted to make a point of that and encourage you to share. Share with a friend, share with me, share with anyone. And let's start being more honest about how it feels to be a mom today, because we know there has never been a harder time to be a mom. We know the village is gone, and yet we are doing it. We are doing it anyway, and that makes us absolutely amazing. Which leads to my exercise for this week, or my challenge. We spoke there at the end, Anna and I, about the importance of tuning into what we need and want, and taking back control so that we can start meeting our needs more. And I know that probably sounds really hard or maybe even a little bit waffly if you're sitting in the trenches of motherhood now. So let's start with it being really, really basic and understand that when you become a mother, you are going through matrescence. And when we go through matrescence, our core belief system and value system changes. And as a result, it can leave us feeling lost. So that we don't know what we need and want anymore. That is why. That is the reason why. So my exercise for you this week is to just have a think about something that brings you joy. And I know if you are maybe really struggling right now, that might be hard to find, but it's there. It could be watching your favorite show on Netflix. It could be the warm shower. It could be that voice note with a friend. It could be the sense of, you know, achievement when you get the laundry put away. It could be that sense of relief when your baby finally goes to sleep. There's something. Find something that brings you a moment of joy, okay? And allow yourself to have it and connect with a friend. They're the two things. Find a moment of joy, tune into it. Why do you find that good? Why does it bring you joy? How can you start doing a little bit more of that? Can you give it to yourself? Do you need someone else to give it to you? And then catch up with a friend. Maybe you haven't spoken to her in a while. Send her a text, send her a voice note. Just connect with her. I miss you. I love you. I would love to have a chat with you. And just connect with her. That is our challenge for this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you found today's episode helpful, please hit the follow or subscribe button. But most importantly, please share with your friends. Because if you related to any of the topics on today's episode, I promise they will relate too. You can also leave me a review and rating wherever you're listening. I'd really appreciate it. If you would like to avail of some additional resources or learn more about The Village, please visit my Instagram page, Mind Mommy Coaching. I hope you have a wonderful week. And remember, it's not selfish to mind mommy, it's essential. This was an Insanity Studios production. The production manager was Charlotte Mason. The podcast producer was Saffron Mirza. And the production assistant was Abby Sandler.